Hey, this is Daniel Tardy with the Entree Leadership Team. Thanks so much for listening to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. Hey, did you know that the lessons taught by Dave on this show are a part of our Entree Leadership Master Series event? If you want to hear the entire Entree Leadership curriculum, join Dave at our next Master Series event happening at Disney Swan and Dolphin Resort in Orlando, Florida, October 14th through the 20th. These tickets are selling fast and we only take 200 people. So visit DaveRamsey.com/EntreeLeadership or give us a call at 888-227-3223 to sign up today.
Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. On today's show, we'll be hearing from Dave teach about communication and defining key results areas for your team members. This is extremely vital. You're going to love this part. We will also have a special interview with Reid Hoffman. Reid is the co-founder and executive chairman of LinkedIn, the world's largest professional networking service. He is also the co-author of the new book, The Startup of You. Adapt to the future, invest in yourself, and transform your career. Now, who am I? My name is Chris Licurdo, and I am your host for the Entree Leadership Podcast. Last episode, we talked to Peter Bregman, author of the book 18 Minutes, talking about finding your focus. We also heard from Dave on time management. This lesson, this week, we're going to be talking about communication and defining one of the most important things that I think you will ever find in your tool bag. Key results areas, or what we call KRAs. I'm not going to go into that. I'm going to let Dave do all that because it is a great topic and it's something you need to listen closely to. So here is Dave talking about KRAs.
The best way to develop job descriptions is to have key results areas, KRAs. I can tell you that probably statistically, unless you guys are way beyond normal, 80% of you don't have any kind of job descriptions written down in a file for your team. Almost none of you do it. Huge mistake. Guess how I learned to do this? I made the same huge mistake. I'm talking to a guy. I'm totally frustrated. He's got the talent. He's got the ability. He's frustrated with me because he thinks he's winning and I think he's a loser. And once we finally got through our anger and our frustration with each other, we both realized we were both on the same team. We believed in the cause. We had integrity. We had work ethic and we had talent. Then what's the problem? We weren't in agreement as to what the goal was. I had never told him for his position, here's what winning looks like. A job description, which we use key results areas. We have three or four or five maximum key result areas, meaning you have four or five or six things. If you do these four or five or six things, one sentence with a couple of sentences of explanation under it, one key point. If you do those four things, by definition, you are succeeding at your job. You can hold it up and go, I'm good at what I do. I can hold it up and go, look, this one's a good one. They're good at what they do. But if you put them to work and they don't have a written job description, a written series of key results areas, areas that are key that we measure results in, if they don't have that in writing, you took them bowling and you turned out the lights. There'll be noise, but we can't tell who's winning. It's frustrating for all that's involved. Write it down. You will be blown away. It's so mandatory at our place. Literally, about 18 months ago, I got all in one of my VP's stuff about this. Because it came in, no one leaves our building, no one gets fired without talking it through with me. I'm sometimes involved personally in the actual discussion, but we don't fire many people. We talk about it a lot, but we really don't fire many people. Once we get them on board, we'll talk about that in another session. But once we get them on board, we really don't. And so when you come in and you want someone to be fired, that's a big discussion at our place still. And I'm going to be involved in the discussion. I'm going to push back. I'm going to challenge you on what's going on. And the guy's going, well, he just is, this. And I said, well, I've observed his work ethic. I mean, I've been following him. I actually pulled his reports out and looked at him. And it's like, he's doing, yeah, but he's this. I said, an attitude problem? No, he's just not got the capacity. He's just not pulling it off. He didn't have the tools in his belt he needs, Dave. It was a mistake when we hired him. I'm like, yeah, maybe. I'll tell you what, go get his file. Give me the key results area, and let's see what they're doing. And he's going through the file and he goes, no key results areas. I said, just get out of my office before I kill you. You're in here getting ready to fire somebody, and you suck as a leader. Don't even come in my office. Don't even come in here and put this guy's head on chopping block, and you haven't led any better than that. You get that key results area done. You get it done in the next 10 minutes, and the three of you sit down. Then the three of us are going to sit down together. We put the guy on our path. Man, he's a Zoom Zoom guy. He's killing it. He had no idea what winning looks like. He was over here doing this stuff that was frustrating everybody, and he thought that was what winning was. We moved him over here and got him where he was doing what he's supposed to be doing, and man, he's Zoom Zoom. He's killing it. And he has total leadership breakdown. That's how key a key result area is. And this VP that I'm dealing with was a sharp VP. Knows his stuff. But he just dropped the ball on that one little detail. That's not a detail. It's not a detail when you are paying someone. As much as payroll is on our P&L, it's the biggest thing on your P&L. When you're paying people, making sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing and they understand that in writing sounds kind of basic. Well, it's not. Most people don't do it. It's like a written budget on personal finance. Very few people do it. Everybody just
kind of got it in my head. We've talked about it. He should know.
Hey, you're just barking up the wrong tree. I'm sorry. I don't believe you. Write it down.
Folks, I can tell you this. I've been teaching this information a very long time. And when it comes to KRAs, when it comes to communication, it is vital. I cannot stress it enough. And as I bring people through, as I teach people entree leadership, as they come through entree leadership, the thing that I hear over and over and over again is when it comes to this area of KRAs, is people tell me that we did not understand how chaotic it was in our business until we implemented KRAs. Before, it was just, you know, work as usual. You come in, things happen the way that they are. You put out fires like you normally do, you know, yada, yada, yada. Once they put KRAs in place, what they discovered was, oh my gosh, life was chaotic before this point. Now we know what winning looks like. Now we know what to do every single day. Now each team member can come in and go, what am I doing? Oh, hey, let me look over here. Yep, this is what I'm supposed to do. It gives them the picture of what winning looks like. When you agree with that team member how their KRA is supposed to look, then you're both on the same page. So that is something you must do. All right, switching gears. Today we are talking to Reid Hoffman, co-founder and executive chairman of LinkedIn, the world's largest professional networking service, period. He is the co-author of the new book, The Startup of Who? You. Adapt to the future, invest in yourself, and transform your career. So do me a big favor and welcome to the show, Reid Hoffman. Reid, it is great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
I enjoyed reading the book. Obviously, it's in my world, it's part of what I have to do. It's being a brand, being somebody who has to get out there and make myself known. It's something that I have to do, starting up of me. So it was great for me to go through this. I wanted to start by saying you start by discussing something that I think is extremely important to everybody. Very few companies nowadays are spending time training people, which it was big in the past. But nowadays, they're actually expecting that you come with the knowledge that they need ready to go to work. Talk more about that.
Well, I think the key thing is that now when I kind of were... industries are changing in a fairly liquid marketplace. You know, companies no longer think that you're going to necessarily work there for 10, 20, 30 years, in which case the training regimes have essentially all broken down. And so they're looking for people who know the skills, who can start the job with the skills very close. And so now it's beholden upon each of us to invest in ourselves and build those skills ourselves. And I think the good news is I think we can. You know, one of the things that I talked about in my own personal past and experience was when I realized that I wanted to be a product manager, and that was much better than the other job I was doing at Apple, I actually went over to the product management group and said, look, can I volunteer to help out with some work and to do some things in order to start building those skills, and having done that led to my next job as a product manager.
And I think this is really important, especially for the young people that are listening, because there's a lot of talk nowadays about how the mindset of 30% of the workforce is going to be this younger generation. And the mindset is, well, it's what are you going to give me? You know, what are you going to do for me if I'm going to come work for your company? And the thing is that company still business still runs the same way. And in fact, like as you're saying, now it's moving in the direction of saying, no, what are you going to bring to the table?
Yep.
So how is this conflict going to be worked out?
Well, I think the high line is, you know, part of a work relationship is something that works very well for both parties. And I think the key thing that I think young folks will need to understand is that, you know, the companies don't approach it as a as an entitlement. They don't approach it as a as something that they think, well, we absolutely have to have you.
Right.
They're approaching it as a look. We need and want to hire people, but we need to hire people who want to do this job, who want to be part of our company in terms of what we're doing. And of course, vice versa, the company needs to be providing a path,
sure,
for the young folks that then leads to a career, leads to a life that they want to do.
Right. If all you have to offer is 20 years of doing the same exact job, then chances are you're not going to get high quality people in that area. You also talk about hubris being one of the biggest reasons for Detroit's failing.
Yep.
I loved going through that in the book. How do you think that happened, and how does that apply? Because the people that are listening, we've got entrepreneurs, we've got leaders, we have people who want to be leaders. How do you think that, how did that happen? How do you think that applies to all the folks that are listening as well?
So in the book, we talk about living in permanent beta, which is to never think of yourself as a finished product, to anticipate that changes and competition is happening.
I love that,
in the industry, in the world. And the hubris that Detroit had, the reason why we did Detroit, it's, you know, maybe perhaps somewhat fashionable to sometimes pick on Detroit, but it was, what people forget is it was the entrepreneurial, you know, locus,
a huge
powerhouse, you know, in the 50s, and yet it fell. And it fell because they didn't live in permanent beta. They believed, oh yeah, we own the market, it's over, we don't see competition coming. And of course, by that point, when the competition came, it slaughtered them.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think I had that question actually the other day. We were doing one of our Entree Leadership Live chats, and somebody asked about that. And they said, you know, what do businesses need to be looking out for? And you need to understand, unless you're a standalone, and even if you are, people are coming fast.
Yep.
They're going to want to take, and their focus is not on being successful yet. If you're in a successful position, then you're less likely to be focused on what got you there, why you're there, and what your original reason was for doing what you're doing. Other folks, they just want to take you down. They want to get everything that you have going on.
Yep.
Explain the three puzzle pieces needed for each person to gain a competitive advantage.
So it's what your current assets are. Assets aren't just, you know, they're more soft assets. They're skills. They're networks. There is your aspirations, in terms of what you want to grow to, what path you're on. You should have, just like any business, you should have a path for growth in your head. And then there's the market realities. It's how is the industry changing? What does competition look like? What are the points of both friction, but also potentially opportunities based on the landscape around you? And you put those three things together in order to have a effective and iterating, you know, kind of career plan for your work.
Okay. And you say also that markets that don't exist don't care how smart you are. What does that mean?
Well, that means that it's not just a question of kind of, you know, like, look, I'm really good. I can bench press a lot. I've got these great skills. If there isn't a market reality that fits what we call in Silicon Valley product market fit, that makes that wants these things in terms of what you are, then you can't sell it. It's like if you create this, if you have this, even if independently it's really interesting, if the market doesn't exist, so you have to not just kind of, I mean, like old, I would say somewhat dated career advice tends to be just discover your passion. Just think about, you know, what it is that you kind of want to do, and then it will work out. And it's like, well, no, actually, you have to look at the world around you. You have to look at what's going on in the market, what's going on in the industry, because it has to be a fit between those things. It's not just kind of an inward-looking journey.
Are you saying that people don't just automatically want to pay for my passion?
I think that is exactly what I'm saying.
It is true to an extent. Definitely go after what you're passionate about, but you have to understand, hey, new Coke, it doesn't work out.
Exactly. Well, it's both that. You need to be passionate to live your life, to do it well, to be committed to what you're doing. So a complete absence of passion is also a disaster. But the problem is that it's both. It's both who you are, you know, assets, market reality, aspirations. It's both who you are and what you have, and also the world around you.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the greatest things as far as like a, you know, I do believe, even though it was, you know, back in the 80s and the early 90s, mission statements became very corporate. People don't realize that mission statements were around for a very long time. I think every person has to have a personal mission statement. And I think one of the greatest things of discovery is what can you do? What, like you say, what are your skills?
Yep.
Do you even know what they are? I sat down with a company that came through and talked with seven of their team leaders, team members that came through Entree Leadership, and just said, if you turn the key on the door today and you guys just walked away, but you wanted to remain a team, do you even know what you could do? They went back and they started focusing on those skills, on their assets, and within 2 months, they started gaining profit like crazy, because they had a different focus of what they could do as a team.
Yep.
Why do you ask people to review their calendars, journals, and emails for the past six Saturdays?
Well, the high line is another thing that people frequently mistake is they think their assets are entirely the skills. They don't realize that their assets are their relationships, their network, the people around them, their alliances, because those help extend the radar network about what's going on, the insight in terms of what's going on in terms of the world around them, their skills themselves, their capabilities in terms of being able to do things. And so the reviewing your emails on Saturdays is kind of a combination of, look, think about what your network is more broadly, how you should connect with them, how you should treat it as a living alliance of something that you collaboratively invest in, and also, of course, you know, kind of what does the market reality around you look like?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Once you have that information, once you're seeing that, what do you do with that?
Well, the thing that, you know, obviously we could go on for some time on this because we have a long section on this in the book. I'd say that in the punchy summary, it's that you need to invest in your alliances and your network around you as firmly as you're investing in your own skills. And it's not something people normally think this is a little kind of icky, because it's like, oh, what do you mean? Like I'm investing in people all out, not being genuine and authentic with them. And our recommendation is no. It's being genuine and authentic because it's an alliance. It's how you help each other. What you're investing in is not kind of like, oh, this relationship, Rolodex asset that I own. It's I'm investing in an alliance where we help each other. And so being thoughtful and directive with room for serendipity in terms of making sure that you're building out the right kinds of alliances with people that you want to help and who want to help you is an extremely important platform for a successful career and actually even to kind of do your work the right way.
I loved what you shared, like the stats of how many people actually get a job by through somebody that is not in their circle. It's not in their immediate circle. It's somebody that they barely even know and barely even talk to, and somehow just that keeping in touch or having a conversation with or something comes up and they end up getting a new job.
Yep, it happens all the time. LinkedIn, off LinkedIn, all of these different channels, because you don't realize how broad the world is around you, and having some connections to it, it helps in all kinds of ways. And the serendipitous opportunity is one of the great ones.
What is ABZ planning?
So one of the things that people normally think about when they think about a plan is they think almost kind of like dominoes. And they kind of go, look, it's just you push over one and it kind of goes in a kind of a linearly order. And the thing is, the world is changing, and you can't really fully predict competition. You need to be much more nimble and flexible about how you build a plan for how you navigate your career and navigate your work life. And ABZ planning is a framework for that. So plan A is kind of what most people kind of understand, which is this is my plan. I'm gonna work here, get these skills, volunteer, get these skills, then get a job like this.
all of the most immediate stuff.
Yeah, instead of this is kind of if everything works out the way it's in my head, that's my plan A.
Mm-hmm.
Plan B is if I think about my plan A, I realize that there are these potential risks and these potential opportunities that can be changing around me, and plans B can change around some as you learn more about the market. And those are your kind of parameters of flexibility, because very frequently your plan A runs into difficulty, and if you haven't thought through a little bit of that, think about it as kind of like running a football down the field. If you haven't thought through a little bit of, I could try this, or I could try this, or I could try this, you can stumble and fall. You can get tackled. And then plan Z is what enables you to take risky plans, risky plan A's, risky plan B's, because you think, okay, if I'm going to try this breakout opportunity, I'm going to try something really new that could really make a difference in my life, what do I fall back to? Like, if it's not working out, how do I fall back? It's kind of like a lifeboat plan to reset a new plan A and plan B around it.
Would you also consider plan Z being a, hey, what if I just want to get risky? What if I want to go after something bigger than, because I think so many people, you really don't know what you're going to do when you're 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't know what you're going to do when you're 22 years old. You know what you think you want to do, and you start in that direction. And I don't remember what the stat is, but something like 73% or 74% of college students don't actually end up in a career that they went to college for. You don't end up there immediately, but yep. There are so many people that are moving along in this path and they go, dang, maybe I would like to try something bigger or better. Would you consider that a Z possibility, or where would you put that in this plan?
Well, I think that could be a plan A or even plan B's. And I think those are, especially when you're young, I think taking some intelligent risks and being somewhat bold is a way to make a differentiation, because usually your plan Z is much easier. So, for example, my own personal plan Z when I was doing that was, look, if I, very early in my career, I went and did my first startup, and I was like, well, if this doesn't work out and I just end up with some debt, I can, I worked out a deal with my dad where it's like, yes, I could rent a room in his apartment, get a job, right, pay off the debt.
The worst case scenario. But
exactly.
It's one that will absolutely work if something goes wrong.
Yeah, it's kind of, so that then allowed me the comfort of really going to the edge on the risk of, I'm going to go try a startup, even though I've never done this before.
I like that. How much time should you spend on both B or individually on B and Z?
Let's see. I'd say it's probably roughly something like 60, 30, 10 in terms of time, maybe 65, 25, or 30, 5, 10. And it's roughly because you really want your plan A to work. On the other hand, part of plan B comes out of analyzing plan A and thinking about what works, what doesn't work, asking your friends about it, asking your allies about it. And they'll say, well, what about this? And you go, okay, I've got some ideas about that. And then plan Z is the, review every so often, but it's kind of the reset of, okay, good, I've got a touchstone if I need to reset.
Mm-hmm. I like that. How do you know when to pivot? Because that's a difficult one for folks. How do you know to pivot between A and B? How do you know when enough is enough?
So the way that I do this is I have, in every project that I do, including my projects at work, my project as career, I have an investment thesis. And what I mean by an investment thesis is kind of like, here is why I think this plan will work. Like, this is why I think this is a good plan to go take a risk on, put some energy into, put a bunch of time into. And what I do is I review that investment thesis. And if my confidence in the investment thesis is trending down, right, that's a really good time to think about a pivot.
Okay.
Right, because it's kind of like, for example, it's like, well, say, for example, like early days in my Apple career, it's like, well, I'm doing this user experience design. I'm okay at this, but I really think I'd be much better at product management. all right, I'm going to go, I basically went and talked to the head of the product management group. I said, look, I think I could be good at this. I understand that you don't have any jobs or tasks, but what if I generated a couple product plans that would be good? If you like them, could we meet with him as a group and talk about them so I could learn? But part of also that learning was, as the product managers talked about it, I was kind of assessing, okay, am I good at this or not? Right? Like,
right.
Like, did I produce something that they thought, oh, this was interesting, this is worth time, yes, let's iterate on this, let's do this more, oh, can you help me with this? And then that gave me confidence in my investment thesis. If instead they were kind of saying, look, you really forgot some basic things, right? You know, this isn't really very interesting. Then I was like, oh, well, okay, maybe I just need to try harder, but also maybe I need to try something else.
Right, absolutely. Now, we are huge, we're educators. We call ourselves, you know, that's what we do. We train people. We teach people how to be entrepreneurs, how to be great leaders. Why is prioritizing learning so important?
Prioritizing learning is critical because without by the way, constant learning throughout your entire
right.
career,
yeah,
just to be really clear,
right.
because those skills, those abilities, that knowledge of the industry, of the companies, is fundamental to any career progress. It's fundamental to being able to get promoted, to have better jobs, to have jobs at better companies, that whole process. Because if you can't do the work, if you can't be essentially a current in your skills in a competitive environment, then it arcs off in a very bad way.
And somebody else will fill that hole.
Yep.
Definitely. I've got a couple of questions. You're going to stick around and do the extended interview for the ChrisLicurto.com readers, but I wanted to get a couple of things in here that have to do with LinkedIn, because you know a little bit about that.
a bit.
You know something there. One comes in from Joel Fortner. It says, this is awesome. I have a question I'm sure many entrepreneurs would love him to answer. What are the top three ways for busy entrepreneurs to use LinkedIn for marketing?
So let's see. So one of them is, it depends, like all entrepreneurs, you're solving a specific problem. One of the things that you can do is, we actually have a direct ads product, which is an ability to target, say, for example, people in a region, people in an industry, people in a function, these sorts of things. So if you have your particular product or service that matches up to a particular professional demographic, that's very easy and direct, and to test them in various ways to see what the response is. Second one would be to participate in groups, because there's all kinds of different professional groups, some around entrepreneurship, some around industries, some around technology, some around, you know, kind of other threads, and to essentially build your connections into those different networks, because part of entrepreneurial success is being connected to customers, being able to hire talent, being able to finance. You know, all of these things are the kinds of connections that that LinkedIn provides. And then I would say that the kind of similarly in terms of building your network is to identify the people who are the second and third degree around you through people that you have an alliance with, you have a very good connection with, who would be most helpful to build a connection with in order to build your business. And in terms of the marketing, that may be a channel relationship, that may be an understanding of how to approach a certain segment or an industry segment, or how to find resources in order to help market your product or service.
Okay, so not just looking at your circle, not just looking at your alliances, but looking at the ones that are in theirs.
Exactly.
Wow, that's fantastic. I like that. I've got a question from Joshua Rivers, who asks, and I think everybody wants to know this, what makes the difference between, what makes LinkedIn better? What's the difference between LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, all that?
Well, we could be here an hour for me answering this question. I'd say a couple of things. One of them is LinkedIn is entirely focused on business. So every single feature is how do you succeed at your work, how do you succeed at your career, how do you succeed if you're an entrepreneur, at building a company. Some unique features that we have as a function of that is, for example, the one we were just talking about, which is an ability to reach and connect with your what we call your second and third degree, is you not just your first degree, the people you're connected to, but the people around them. And this can be absolutely critical for finding the right job and opportunity, finding the right connection in order to know what to invest in, making the right connection in order to, you know, kind of market or sell a product, right, or hire somebody into your company. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that one's key. But then we also, of course, have LinkedIn Today, which is what's going on in your industry for you in terms of information that's kind of a targeted for where you are as a professional. Anyway, it goes, every single feature along the tab is how do you advance your work and career?
All right. I love it. Well, Reed, thank you so much for doing this. You're going to stick around and do an extended interview for the chrislocurto.com readers?
Great.
Fantastic. How can they get more? Obviously, the book, The Startup of You, they can get that pretty much anywhere, but send them to Amazon or send them to where?
Amazon works just fine. I think Amazon has one of the, I think it's the lowest price, but I'm not positive, but it's definitely a low price on the book.
Okay.
And also, if people are really interested in it, we have a LinkedIn group where people talk about the themes and the startup of you on LinkedIn.
Nice. And how can they get more of Reed?
Well, actually, if there's really interesting discussion threads and questions in the LinkedIn group, I occasionally go in and answer a question or participate in a thread.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, Reed. Folks, the book is The Startup of You. I know there's a lot of you out there that are needing to pick this up right now. You're wondering what to do, where to go. Folks that are looking for a new you, looking for a new leadership, folks that are in that role. So make sure that you pick that up. Thanks again, Reed.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that was, I like that interview. That was good stuff. I like the thoughts that he threw out there about you need to understand more of you. You've got to know your soft assets. You've got to know your skills. You've got to know what your aspirations are. And by the way, you've got to actually take a look at what the market realities are. What's going on out there? What's happening out there? So you've got to see you, but you've also got to know what's going on. It's just not good enough to know yourself. But that's a great place to start, especially like when he was saying, assets are your alliances. Understand what you've been doing. Take a look at your calendars. Take a look at your journals. And if you're not journaling, by the way, start journaling. Start writing this information down. So you've got something to go back and look on. Take a look at your emails for the past 6 Saturdays. See what's going on. As you do that, then it helps you to really focus on where you want to go, what your aspirations are, what you want to do. So I really enjoy that. I think you guys, hopefully you guys got a lot out of that. Becky, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think we should go back and talk a little about the lesson from Dave this week. There was just a lot in there that might be new to people. They might have never heard of a key result area.
Right.
I didn't hear about it before I came to work for this company. So I think something big that Dave said that will probably resonate with people is without these key results area, it's like you're taking people bowling and turn out the lights.
Right.
They don't
Absolutely.
Know, you don't know who's winning, and that's frustrating. And
are you a good bowler?
I am a pretty good bowler.
You're a pretty good bowler?
Would I have the...
When you
know,
get the little lanes, the gutter guards up.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I get a strike every time. But yeah, that was something that really stuck out to me.
You've been here for, what, a couple years now?
Mm-hmm.
What was your experience with KRS?
You know, it's something really great to have to fall back on whenever you do want to know what a picture of winning looks like. So without that, then, you know, you are kind of flying blindly. So
yeah. And you came into work for Mefford, so...
Yeah, without that, you know, I might know every movie quote that he has quoted,
he did,
but
hey,
without
I'm
my
in,
KRA.
I'm here today, I'm hearing this, you know. My favorite movie quote is from Office Space. Whenever Becky misses, I say to her, hey, you're missing work. And she says to me,
well, I didn't really miss work.
But I know that you missed working with Chris and I.
You keep thinking that. Yeah, I miss, you know, LaCurto.
There you go. If she didn't have a KRA, what would she do? She would know every movie line there is out there.
I would.
She would.
Which
and
would
I
good.
Feel like that's important.
That's important to somebody. To
if
somebody,
people
somebody.
Learn anything from today's podcast, it's the importance of memorizing movie lines to be able to drop them in leadership points in the middle of meetings and things like
so
that.
Illustrations.
Right,
they
yeah.
illustrate points.
So if anybody gets anything, movie lens are great for communication.
That reminds me of a line from Lord
okay,
of the Rings.
All right. So we're moving along. Folks, coming up this Thursday at 9 a.m. Central, we will be hosting the Entree Leadership Live Chat. Come stop by for an hour to kick off your week, your work day, and learn from fellow Entree leaders. Did we mention that this is completely free? Yes, it is. Still is. Visit DaveRamsey.com/EntreeLeadership next Thursday and join in on the discussion. Reminders, follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership or email us at podcast@EntreeLeadership.com or follow me on Twitter at Chris Licurdo or go to get this every single day at chrislicurdo.com. Don't forget to head over to the business section of Dave Ramsey, one of the two, .com and sign up for their monthly newsletter. It is free as well. Folks, here's what we keep trying to do. We're just trying to give you different ways of getting more information to change your leadership. If you want to hear more about these events, make sure that you go on over there to EntreeLeadership.com as well and check out our upcoming events. We have got our Entree Leadership One Day, which we hit the road. We were just in Indianapolis, which that was huge.
Just had the simulcast event,
which that was big. That was broadcast nationally across the country. So that is fantastic. We've still got Phoenix and Houston coming up as well. One last thing, if you want to join us at our Entree Leadership Master Series event, I think we still have a few tickets
yeah,
left.
Yeah, just a few. So
we got a few tickets left. Go to EntreeLeadership.com or call us, call our team at 888-227-3223. Folks, we do this because we want you to change your life. We do this because we want you to change your leadership. We want you to change your business. We want you to change the way that you run your team. So with that, that puts another podcast in the books. I need to thank the people who make this happen every single time. Chris Mefford, our executive producer, but I think we need to probably come up with another title.
He's the IMDb of the Entree Leadership Podcast.
He's the IMDb database.
If we need to know a movie quote, we just go to him.
We go to Mefford. Colin Fatke, our audio engineer. Becky Powell, our producer, who does a fantastic job. Reed Hoffman for jumping in on the podcast. And, of course, Dave Ramsey. Folks, once again, take this information out there. Change your life, change your leadership, change your business. Have an incredible week and join us on the next Entree Leadership Podcast.
Folks, right now is the best time in history to operate or start a small business. If you're ready to take your leadership to the next level or start your own company, then join me, Dave Ramsey, at Walt Disney World's Swan and Dolphin Resort on October 14th through the 20th for our Entree Leadership Master Series. At this event, I'll teach you everything you ever wanted to know about building and growing a profitable business. You'll also experience personal leadership coaching from our executive team. Folks, you won't find this stuff in some college business class. This is 20 years in the trenches of leading and actually running a business. It's based on my New York Times number one bestseller, Entree Leadership. So bring your spouse, bring your team, but you better hurry. These events are limited to only 200 people, and they always sell out early. Call the Entree Leadership team at 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223 or online at DaveRamsey.com.